tour and take three questions in Cape Town. May I see by show of hands? We know the regime, your name, your institution, blah, blah, blah. The gentleman there, and Nicholas Bauer, and the taker, and the gentleman right at the back. Thank you.
Right, good morning, and thank you for taking my question. My question is for the Minister of Defense. During a post-SONA debate in the National Assembly, the Speaker of the National Assembly did say that the matter relating to
Sorry, your name and number.
All right, apologies. It's Bonolo from the New Age newspaper. All right, thanks again. I'll start again. During a post-SONA debate in the National Assembly, the Speaker did mention that the matter relating to the presence of 441 SANDF soldiers had been referred to you for further investigation. I just wanted to find out if this matter is receiving special attention by you, and how far are you into your investigations as well? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Nicholas?
Good morning, Ministers. Nicholas Bauer from ENCA. First question is just generally to the cluster. You're calling on anybody that feels as though their rights are not being respected to report it to the local SAPS branch or station. I'd like to know what government's approach is when it comes to foreign nationals that are in the country that are perhaps too scared to go to the SAPS because they feel that they would be victimized. Some also may not have their documentation in order, but could fall victim to xenophobic attacks or attacks directed at foreign nationals. How does government deal with that, and what's your stance on it? And then furthermore, perhaps this is a question for Home Affairs Minister Gigaba. Your response to local government's approach to foreign migrants and violence associated with xenophobia, particularly Herman Mashaba, the Johannesburg mayor's approach to this.
Yes, the end.
Good morning, Ministers. Sipho Sterman from SABC TV News. This is directed probably Home Affairs. Just a bit of clarity on around the seven employers that have been charged. Just when was this inspection undertaken, and exactly what areas? And is this something we're going to be seeing a lot more going forward, or was it just an immediate response to what has been happening? And just to add on that, to that, do you think then the fact that businesses have been caught with employing undocumented migrants, does that give a bit of credibility to the cries of locals that foreign nationals are taking jobs? And also, second question relates to the deployment of SANDF members. You mentioned that, just talk to us about how many have you deployed to monitor the borders, and you mentioned that between January and February there have been major successes that have been registered. What are these successes? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Cape Town?
Yes, we have questions in Cape Town.
Shoot.
Good morning. I'd rather ask, not should. Hi, it's Marianne Merton from Daily Maverick. It's a question in the absence of the police minister to the acting national police commissioner, Major General Pashlane. You tabled the crime statistics for the first three quarters of 2016 at Parliament on Friday. This was the first time this was done since Cabinet's decision early last year that crime statistics should be tabled quarterly. What was the reason for the SAPS not having presented crime statistics on a quarterly basis, but given 9 months of crime statistics? And will the SAPS next month be able in a position to give the quarter? In terms of the cluster, my question relates to whether at this stage the cluster has considered is moving on what President Jacob Zuma on Friday told the National House of Traditional Leaders, that he had discussions with the cluster and raised certain issues that there's not, the laws are not correct in terms of dealing with crime, and that the cluster should consider coming up with new laws or changing laws to make the fight more effective. As the president told the traditional leaders, the police in his interactions both at Inyanga and Shoshanguve told him they arrest a criminal and then the courts release them. And a very short specific question to the Minister of Home Affairs, please. The presentation makes reference to the Border Management Agency, gives it certain status and responsibilities. However, whatever this agency may be at this stage, it is not based in law and legislation, because the Border Management Bill is still to be passed by Parliament. Could you perhaps elaborate on this? Thank you.
Before we move to the second question...
Hold on. Okay. Hold on. Marianne, I'm done with you. You're not coming back, aren't you? Thank you.
That's okay. One. Thank you.
What I was going to request is that, because there is a feedback of some sort, if maybe we can switch off our mics that side, then we'll be able to continue smoothly. Thank you.
Okay. Can we switch off our mics? There's a mic there. Yeah, there. Thank you. Continue, sir.
Good morning, Ministers. Linda Ensel from Business Day. I'd like two questions, please, to Mr. Mashloba. What is your view, Minister, on whether there are foreign governments or foreign agencies stoking up protest and rebellion internally against the government? And do you think extra measures are required to combat this? Secondly, to the Minister of Home Affairs, the Minister of Finance is terribly concerned about the Border Management Agency taking over customs and excise. And given the diminished returns from SARS and the threatened projection for revenue, is it not unwise to tamper with something which is working and which is delivering the goods on the customs and excise front? And apparently you and the Minister of Finance disagree on this, and is there any room for compromise or retracting the proposal? Thanks.
Spiro, that will be all for now.
Okay. May I ask the last speaker to please indicate a name and the institution she
comes
from.
My apologies. Linda Ensel, Business Day. Thanks.
Thank you very much. May I hand over to Minister Defence, the Chairperson.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen from the media. The entire team is here to respond to your questions and your comments. Bonolo, on the deployment of the members of the Defence Force to SONA, maybe we should shelve. I could easily give you an answer, but I think we should shelve it for now. I'll tell you why. There are parties which have taken us to court, or which have taken the Speaker and the Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces to court on this matter. And I suspect that the South African National Defence Force is amongst the respondents. Safe to say that we have made an undertaking to the presiding officers that we will provide them with a full report of the numbers of people we had on the ground in Cape Town on the day. As you are aware, that the statement which had come out was that we would have 441 members of the SANDF on the ground. You'll recall that in 2015, when there was a similar controversy about numbers from the SANDF, we actually gave a full breakdown of who was on the ground in Cape Town and what they were doing for deployments around SONA. So if you allow me, rather we give that answer through the presiding officers of Parliament, so that through Parliament we can then respond to the questions raised by South Africans. The next question on the South African National Defence Force is the deployment on the borderline. Currently, we've deployed 15 companies out of 22 companies on the borderline. Of course, the question is why 15 out of 22? Because for some time now, I think for the past 3-4 years, we have been making an undertaking to South Africans that at some point we'll be able to deploy all 22 companies which are on standby to go to the borderline. But unfortunately, due to budget constraints, we've currently deployed 15. But of course, you'll also recall that for some time that we had deployed 13 companies, and until 2015-16, we then increased the numbers with 2 more companies. What are the successes? Obviously, the South African National Defence Force does not work on its own. We are responsible simply for border line management, border control. It's the responsibility of the Department of Home Affairs. But remember, we are a multidisciplinary, we have a multidisciplinary approach to border management. So you have the police on the border, who will then give you statistics, amongst others, about some of the successes which we are referring to. Well, the statistics, yes, we do have, but I'll leave it to the police to provide you with the statistics which will show that indeed there have been significant achievements made by this approach, this interdepartmental approach, collaboration on the borderline. I think those are the two matters raised in relation to the South African National Defence Force, and I leave the Minister of Home Affairs, State Security, and the Commissioner of Police to respond to the rest of the questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for the questions, and thank you, Honorable Minister Mapisa Ngagula, for the leadership and the responses to the questions that have been asked thus far. Nicholas, should anybody be scared to go to the local police stations? There are councillors in communities, there are ward committees in communities, there are different immigrants organizations such as the Africa Diaspora Forum and others, where people can direct their concerns and complaints, and those will be attended to. We have had instances where, when these are raised, we respond timeously, first to check the validity of the report and to act should it be established that there is proof that the complaint being raised is valid. Obviously, we take the view that undocumented immigrants, though they are in South Africa in breach of South Africa's immigration laws, they remain human beings and will be treated in terms of our human rights ethos. That is why we have the Lindela Repatriation Center. We have offered a permanent office to the Human Rights Commission, the South African Human Rights Commission. There are judges of the Constitutional Court who conduct annual inspections and produce reports to the department and other institutions. And we've made the Lindela Repatriation Facility open to other institutions, including the media, should they wish to inspect it and report on any transgressions which may be taking place. And so, if you are undocumented in South Africa, we are duty bound by law to repatriate you. During the previous financial year, we repatriated about 33,339 people. It is quite an expensive undertaking on our part, given our budget constraints. And that is why the department has taken the view that we need a much more sustainable approach to managing migration, particularly in the region, and especially to manage the migration into South Africa of economic migrants and other undocumented migrants. Our view is to, our wish or the plan towards which we are working is to encourage all the nationals of our neighboring countries to enter South Africa through recognized ports of entry using documents. And for that to happen, we need the collaboration of our neighboring countries. And that's why over the past 12 plus months, we've been engaging very rigorously with our neighbors in a proactive program to encourage them to document their nationals so that we can encourage them to enter South Africa through ports of entry as regular immigrants. But nobody in South Africa has a right, and that's why, if I may couple this with the question you were asking about pronouncements by certain leaders at local governments and elsewhere, that's why we've been cautioning. I think I am on record persistently warning, and even the statement today does reiterate this, the government's caution to all leaders in the country to be restrained in terms of their public pronouncements, so that you do not, by your pronouncements as a leader, encourage mob vigilantism and encourage any actions which may result to loss of life and destruction of property. At the end of the day, and you will notice that even the government statement refers to undocumented immigrants rather than illegal immigrants, because the moment you define somebody as illegal, the moment you make a sweeping statement that all immigrants bring crime to South Africa and all immigrants in a particular city have turned that city into a jungle, you are unwittingly encouraging vigilantism, and you are reducing human beings into animals, and therefore justifying any sort of unconstitutional and unhuman rights action which may be taken against those individuals or those groups of persons on the basis that you've defined them as animals who have turned your city into a jungle. The other issue that is important to raise in this regard is that when people make these sweeping statements, they are directing them at African immigrants. And that is grossly unfortunate, because South Africa is, after all, first and foremost, an African country located in Africa. And therefore, it makes sense that the most immigration challenges that we should face, because of the political stability and the economic strength of our country, should emanate from the African continent. It couldn't be from any other region in the world. It has to be from the African continent. And therefore, to castigate African nationals by calling them animals, turning South African cities into jungles, as if they alone are bringing crime in South Africa and those from Europe, the Americas, are not bringing crime, and to castigate immigrants as bringing crime to start with. We shouldn't associate crime with immigrants. We should take the view which has been taken by the cluster, and our statement makes that firm statement that crime is crime. It doesn't matter who commits it. Crime is not better when committed by a South African, and only worse when committed by an immigrant. That's why the concerns that have been raised by communities have been taken to heart. We've appreciated the statements by the people of Rosettenville, who clearly said to us that their actions were not xenophobic. They were addressing themselves to criminal areas, and they pointed us to those six houses, and there are police in the area that are undertaking actions in those areas to ensure that we can prevent any proliferation of crime in those areas. And there are other activities that we are undertaking that are addressing themselves to the issues and concerns that have been raised by South African communities. Now, I think that brings me then to the question raised by Sipo. The inspections that you are that you were asking about have been undertaken in Tshwane, in Johannesburg. In actual fact, we have been to business premises. We've raided two spa outlets, retail outlets. We've raided a hotel. We've raided panel beating shops, garages. We've raided shops and businesses owned by foreign nationals. We've raided a number of institutions where we have undertaken these activities across the country. They are going to continue. You must remember that even prior to the flare-up of anxiety in the country and fear, the department had issued a statement through me that we were going to meet with various businesses to discuss with them the employment of South Africans and compliance with South African laws. We met with the restaurants, the hospitality sector. I had a meeting which was scheduled with the construction companies this week, but it's being rescheduled because of urgent commitments that have come up. We have convened a meeting with business organizations, including BUSA, the Black Business Council, and others, to discuss these issues. The farmers unions and others, to discuss these issues with them, because we want compliance with South African laws. This is going to be an ongoing a program. We've gone to the cluster and requested support. The operations which have been undertaken thus far have been undertaken with the support of the cluster as a whole, as we have said, resulting in 56 businesses raided, 147 people arrested, most of them for being in possession, for not being in possession of documents. Others are drug-related arrests. Seven managers are going to be charged. And you see, it then helps if it is government that is leading these interventions, because it places us at a position where we can charge the managers for contravening South African laws. Because if individuals take initiative on their own, the victims become even documented immigrants who have a right to work, but they become working class immigrants who themselves are being exploited as much as the South Africans who are being unemployed in those business undertakings. And so if and when we take the action ourselves, we charge the managers for contravening South African laws, we ensure the reversal of their recruitment practices, and ensure that South Africans do get the jobs. We do want to see South Africans employed, even companies, business and businesses owned by foreign nationals, by immigrants in South Africa, must ensure compliance with South African law by employing majority South Africans in those businesses. And we are going to continue with these activities to ensure that compliance. I think the Minister of Defence has responded to the issue of the deployment of the National Defence Force. I need to emphasize that the reason why the National Defence Force is at the present moment employed to manage our borderline is because the border management agency authority has not yet been established. The National Defence Force has done incredible work in managing our borderline and ensuring that it is kept safe. We all suffer from resources constraints. So there are areas around the country which are leaking, such as near Ingwavuma, and in at the borders with some of our neighboring most immediate neighboring states, where there are leakages, and we hope that with the resources permitting and greater collaboration, we should be able to improve our management of our borderline to address those leakages and ensure that we encourage the nationals of our neighboring states to enter South Africa as regular immigrants. The question from Marian and Linda are related. And I think Marian is correct. There is no legislation yet, but the legislation is at the final stages of the parliamentary process. We expect that next week, Tuesday, the portfolio committee will approve it clause by clause and be able to then move it forward to parliament so that there can be a second reading debate, then moves to the NCOP and it gets passed after a process there too. And then we can start with the actual work of establishing the border management authority. The concerns which have been raised by various ministers have been addressed. We, you know, sometimes it does help not to take a one-sided view on an issue, to consider all views and therefore either ask a balanced question or make a balanced statement, because sometimes in the questions asked you may read the bias of the person asking the question. If you read the Border Management Authority Bill, which is before Parliament, it states clearly that all revenue collection will go to the National Revenue Fund. It doesn't come to Home Affairs, it doesn't come to the Border Management Authority. The bill itself says so. It goes to the National Revenue Fund. Now, if you look at the customs function and excise function at the ports of entry, by the time a truck or a good arrives at our port of entry, 90% of the time, the payment would have been made through EFT to the National Revenue Fund. So the money will already be in possession of the South African Revenue Service. So it would not even reach the port of entry. Then we have inserted a clause in the bill which ensures that even the remaining 10%, as soon as it is collected, should it be collected at a port of entry, it will go straight into the National Revenue Fund. There's absolutely nothing that goes into the BMA, absolutely nothing that goes to Home Affairs. And so the concerns which are being raised have been addressed and attended to. Now, even with regard to the physical personnel, you take the customs function, you split it into three at ports of entry. There are those that deal with inspections, There are those that deal with enforcement, and there are those that deal with revenue collection. Those that deal with revenue collection are not at the port of entry, and that's the majority of your customs officers. Those who are at the ports of entry are the ones that deal with enforcement and inspections. And we have also made a commitment as the department that there will be a memorandum of understanding with the National Treasury and SARS to ensure that the SARS is also represented in some form to ensure full compliance with the collection of the 10% remaining revenue at the ports of entry. The people who deal with inspections and enforcement at the ports of entry also constitute a minority, an overwhelming minority of the people who are part of customs, and therefore, in our view, the concern about revenue collection has been completely addressed to the best satisfaction of both the National Treasury and SARS. There has been a process led by the Deputy President as directed by Cabinet, which arrived at this conclusion. And fortunately, the Department of Home Affairs had already anticipated these concerns and inserted in the amendments to the BMA bill these changes which address the concerns about revenue collection. So it would seem to me that there is no more room for compromise required, because all compromise that was necessary in this regard has been made. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, and to the other ministers and the DGs that are here, and to the colleagues from the media. Well, on the question that Marianne has asked about President's call to us, I think the statement is very clear. One of the things that has happened is that this government of the ANC, we always try to know how our communities live. When the president visited Inyanga Township, his experience of interacting with communities and the challenges that our communities are making a plea to government, that government, can you create conditions that in our own communities, at our own homes, at work, at school, we should be able to feel free. And then the discussion with also the law enforcement agencies, including the one that was done here in Swane in Soshanguv. It will be reasonable that after 22 years of democracy, and after 22 years when the constitution was enacted into law, we review what works, and we also review what doesn't work, and is very normal. Therefore, the instruction has been given to us as a security cluster to say, building on the experiences of our own people on the ground, but also building on the experiences of the people who do their work on a daily basis, what are the frustrations? Because in as much as we could see that the fight against crime and corruption, a lot has been done, but the experience on daily basis of our people on the ground and our ability to ensure successful prosecutions are a challenge. Therefore, we need to strengthen certain laws, and it should be able to be done so that at least criminals, they will know that crime doesn't pay. And we have been given a very short period to say, let's look at that. And I don't think there's anything abnormal. And it's very important that that particular process must be supported to review legislation. Well, on the question that was asked by Linda from Business Day, well, it's not a question we're answering for the first time. I don't know how should we answer it without creating headlines or sensationalization. I saw even an article this morning, Chair, that the ANC on its papers is talking about these issues. And someone says there is no evidence. Probably, what do we seek to achieve? It's very simple. If you look at the world today, the world has a number of challenges. And the world, in as much as South Africa, we believe in terms of our foreign policy that there will be peace and friendship. Countries, in one way or the other, they are competing. And in certain instances, history will tell you that there have been wars, people fighting for various reasons. And if you look at the world today, it's actually more unstable than it was more than 15, 20 years ago. There is a high level of unilateralism that is happening. That is actually putting the world at tenterhooks. We have also seen that in a number of countries, it's not actually even a hearsay, it's a fact, where there's been unconstitutional regime change. It will happen to any country. It does happen. The destabilization we've seen, including the rise in terrorism, because terrorism, it does not actually come up somewhere. There's someone who's supporting it one way or the other, and the devastating impact that it creates where certain states are being reduced to failed states. The color revolution that is there, of late you will know that there is a lot of militarization. You could see military zones are back again. That is happening there. Probably, if Linda, you want to write, give the context of the geopolitics, what are we dealing with? We can confirm that South Africa is not an exception of being attacked as a country because who we are, what we stand for in the communities of the world. There are state and non-state actors who are at play. They are at play wanting to exert influence in South Africa over this government in one way or the other. And some of them, they choose to influence us in a positive way. They come and talk to this government, we have a relationship. Others, they will do it in a clandestine way to actually undermine us as a country. Remember, we're a sovereign state. We don't need a call from another country what to do with our own country. We actually have a territorial integrity. That's why we are here as a security cluster to these states. And all the time when they do these things, it's either they are being pushed by national interest, if it is state actors, but there are those who are actually pushed in a capital system or because of issues of economy. There is too much economic wars that are happening where a country can knock down a country on the basis that is being taken on issues around the economy. While others, they will actually push to influence a country on the basis of their national security, because national security is very important for any country. And these individuals, they will actually work in various countries, which is normal. For it to succeed, you'll have people who are going to collaborate, either wittingly or unwittingly. And our duty as a state is to assist those South Africans to say, don't think that the world looks straight like you do, so that we increase our civic education and awareness. And we talk about these things. What will you always do if you want to influence a country, especially unconstitutional regime change? You will choose issues and you will choose organizations and individuals to do certain things. That's why we've been very key that an issue like education, a very important issue we've chosen, because it resonates with all of us. Some elements uses it to actually undermine the state. Not that the issues that are raised by young people are not important, but they are using it. An issue around unemployment, an important issue that we must deal with as a state, is a weakness that we are dealing with in terms of our economy not responding and other issues. We can be able to use that. But for it to succeed, you must also be able to get people that are going to collaborate. Unfortunately, there are certain people in the media. You can use the media. It is an important instrument that you can win the hearts and mind of individuals. Whoever controls the media has an advantage to control what goes out. At times, you know, some of you who are working in the industry, you will know, sometimes there's too many, you know, when there's called freedom of the press, there's even actually the freedom just to write, where your story can be checked, it kicked out. It's get to be used. And you will look that they will even choose prominent individuals. They will come in and say, no, want to help you because of my own socio-economic condition. It's happening. And in South Africa, we're not going to be apologetic not to raise it. The fact of the matter that in the geopolitics of the world, we have chosen to be friends with other people who have been friends for us, in certain quarters, it threatens their own national interest. Therefore, we become to be at the center of a focus. But probably, Linda, if you have time, we need to discuss it. I hope when the ANC releases this document, say, Comrade Chair, they will participate. But don't expect us to go around and say who does what. But we'll say, look at this thing. The color revolution. Have you ever seen how many NGOs that are here at home? And most of them, they don't want even to disclose their funding. You have an issue. There's nothing wrong about NGOs. There's NPOs here, they're doing an important work. But those ones that you know that they are funding certain things to happen, where some of the people are abusing even our own system in terms of the judiciary, you run to the court to deal with the political matter because you want to undermine a decision that must be made by a particular strike. It takes different forms. Therefore, in South Africa, we are on record, we are not an exception. Color revolution is happening. attempts to do unconstitutional regime change are happening, like it has happened in the north of Africa, continues to happen in the Middle East and other parts of the globe. That would be the response that I think, Comrade Chair, we should be able to give. But let's not write in a manner that we try to sensationalize, to say, where is evidence? We know who does what. We will not say things that we don't know. Our duty is just to put counterintelligence measures so that people can be able to continue to be able to do their socioeconomic activities without any disruption. That's why we are having security services and intelligence services. We do that work quietly, so, and at the end of the day, the country proceeds, because South Africa should never, and it will never be a failed state because of an influence either by state actors or non-state actors. Our duty is to defend our sovereignty and integrity. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thanks, Minister. The one question that SIPOS raised was around the successes. Minister, I'm not going to break down the figures, because the figures that we would have presented as part of the crime statistics will not only be resembling an effort of the South African Police Service, it's an effort of the cluster, where when the Defence Force execute their mandate of supporting the police, they would have made a contribution, particularly around the borders, in as far as recovering stolen vehicles, confiscating weapons that will be coming in or out of the country, the illegal ones, in respect of drugs, arrests, in respect of undocumented persons, and so on. Just the question that Marianne raised on the crime statistics. The crime statistics are available the first month following the end of the quota. It is so that we were unable to release in the first two quotas immediately at the end of the quota because of the process that we have in place. First, once we have done our consolidation, we table the crime statistics before Cabinet, following which we table before the Portfolio Committee on Police, which is the point at which we go public. But availability, they are available. I'm not going to say to you that we are going to release the statistics next month. The financial year will be ending the 31st of this month. We will also be working together with Stats SA in the verification and the auditing of the statistics in preparation for our annual report. So at an opportune moment, we will present the statistics. Thanks, Minister.
Thank you very much, Ministers, and the Commissioner and DG. I will have the last round, because I believe, and this is an assumption, yeah? I believe the Ministers have dealt with all the questions elaborately. However, I need to, as the Minister of Home Affairs says, a freedom of speech does not need to be curtailed. I shall not do that. But this is the last
Spiel.
Round.
I'm sorry. Spiel.
Ma'am.
I think there is a representative of the Department of Justice here. Advocate. Yes, because there's a question which has not been responded to here, that of arrests made by the police, and how you from Justice quickly release those people on bail, and whether there is proper statistics on rates of conviction vis-a-vis the high rates of arrests.
Thank you, Minister. May I request the representative from Justice to respond to that. Thank you. Advocate Kosana.
Thank you, Minister, and all guests here. Minister Mahlova answered the question partly, in the sense that the call by the President to review the legislation applicable in the criminal security cluster also relates to the bail legislation. Minister Masuta was not here today. He had basically initiated a process which will look into how we strengthen our bail laws, because we also operate on a system that is basically inherited from the old legislation. And as ministers have said, there are new developments which basically require review of how the system works, and this basically will entail more work that must be done to that. What I can basically mention quickly around the bail legislation is that, one, there are very limited grounds today under which bail is granted, and basically if somebody is able to prove that they'll attend court or not skip bail or not interfere with the witnesses, the court are easily persuaded to release them on bail. But there are other matters that must be looked into, like issues of the state security, issues of the sovereignty of the state, issues of the community, issues of the victims affected by the crime, etc. A matter that must come into bail, and all those were never included into the legislation as it currently stands. And the comprehensive review will look under those aspects to make sure that bail is not only a mechanical process of showing whether we can pay, etc., but take all holistic view around that, around those issues. The minister is engaging with the Chief Justice and the judiciary, who are the critical role players in that space, so that as we do so, we do not interfere the judicial independence, but we provide an effective and efficient legal framework under which all South Africans and everybody in South Africa is protected by the law. And those also deal with the issues the NPS represented here around the issue of the conviction rates, etc. One issue which have come up, which will be part of that review, is that the conviction rate must be also be looked in the context of what gets reported to the police. What happened to various cases that get reported but are not processed through the value chain up the end of the logical end of the trial, etc. So the review of the legislation, including the strategies which the minister alluded to in the statement, that there's a need to review the National Crime Prevention Strategy, because it was drafted in 1996, and there are many things which have evolved, and I think that process will take shape when we look into legislation and also into those kind of measures. There's one process which was also announced by our minister, the need to create a new criminal justice strategy, so that all the law enforcement and departments of the cluster look into what are the weaknesses around the criminal value chain and put systems and resources in place to address those measures, etc. But as I've said, the ministers have covered much of that question. It's only the emphasis that we wanted to give from the justice perspective. Thank you, ministers.
Thank you very much. The last round, colleagues, Nicholas and Sipo, is it? Thank you. Cape Town?
Yes, we have 3 follow-up questions.
Hold on.
Okay.
3 follow-up questions. Okay, 3 follow-up questions.
Yes.
Nicholas, shoot.
Thank you. I'll try and keep it very brief. Minister Mahlova, perhaps you could respond to what intelligence services are doing to counter false narratives on social media. There's various Twitter accounts, there's various social media profiles on Facebook and elsewhere that seem to be promoting a certain narrative. And I understand there's, you know, in any society there's a battle of ideas, but it's been proved in many cases that these accounts are fake and are being used by, you know, various organizations and otherwise. So what means does the intelligence services in South Africa have to act against that? And then perhaps for Acting Commissioner Pahlani or anybody in the security cluster that could answer, the grants issue, there's still no clear plan as to how grants will be paid come the 1st of April. I understand that's not an issue you guys deal with, but one of the plans that has been touted is cash payments, which could offer a myriad of problems in terms of trying to keep grant beneficiaries safe and ensure that Tsotsis don't rob them. Is the security cluster ready and able to deal with that? Should that option have to be taken by the Social Development Department? Thank you,
Nicholas. May I just request that we shouldn't conflate issues?
But it's a security cluster matter, though.
Nicholas, let us not conflate issues. You had an opportunity to speak to the Minister of Social Development earlier. Let us not conflate issues.
It's a security matter, though.
It's fine. I'm just raising it.
I understand, but it's a security matter.
I agree with you, but let's not conflate issues. Sipo?
Good day again. Just to acting National Police Commissioner or anyone else able to respond to this, do you think perhaps there was a failure in policing regarding the issues that the communities in Tshwane and Rosettenville have raised around crimes that they believe are associated with foreign nationals, that is prostitution and drug dealing? Has there really been an effort to zone in into those areas? And certainly you don't have to go far away. Just driving after 10 p.m. here on Pretoria, so you do see some sex workers working there. Not necessarily that is driven by foreign nationals, but what efforts are you doing to deal with those issues that the communities are taking up themselves because they feel police are doing nothing? So can you assure the communities that you are doing something around these issues?
Thank you, Sipo. Cape Town.
Yes, please. I'll take Marianne first, Linda and Paul, if I'm not mistaken, in that order.
On my request, Chair, please ask Marianne to be short.
Very, very short. Very short, unlike some other colleagues. The first question to the SAPS Acting Commissioner, did I understand you correctly because of the processes you've implemented, i.e. the tabling before Cabinet, the police is unable to release the quarterly crime statistics as per Cabinet instruction. To Minister Mashlobo, you mentioned you have a time frame for the review of legislation. Could you perhaps be a little bit more specific? And then to Advocate Skosana, I'm afraid you completely confused me by bringing up a review of the bail legislation, because we already have stringent bail legislation. So, for example, bail is not easily granted under Schedule 5 and Schedule 6 offences, which include murder, which include rape, etc., etc. Perhaps you could assist me in just clarifying this. Thank you.
Okay, the next
well
one
done,
will be Linda. Thanks.
Good morning, Linda Insaw from Business Day. Minister Gagaba, I wonder if you could just clarify whether there have been any convictions of managers for illegal employment of migrants, and what law that takes place under and what the penalties are. Thank you.
That will be
ladies
all from
and gentlemen. So continue, sir. Continue.
I was just saying that will be all from Cape Town, Speaker. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the last round. I hope you appreciate that. Minister, Chair, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm facilitator. The Minister of State Security will take the questions relevant to him. However, there is a matter which was raised here which relates to pensions, payout of pensions, and I heard Spiro appealing to Nicholas not to conflate issues. But truth of the matter, indeed, it is a security matter. But what makes me happy, and I think which has made all of us very happy, is the reassurance we have received from the Minister of Social Development that come the 1st of April, all people who receive social grants from the state will receive their money. And my appeal to the media is that that's the narrative we should send out to South Africans. I believe the manner in which we've dealt with the issue is rather the way it has been reported is sending panic to ordinary South Africans who do not understand what is going on, what the processes are, or what the processes should be, which should have been followed. South Africans who don't even have a clue, for instance, of what constitutional court ruling was made 2 years ago. And I believe that it is the manner in which we are reporting which is now causing a state of panic. In fact, the responsibility of the media and the responsibility of all South Africans who understand what is happening and who have the ability to interpret some of the statements which have been made by the Minister of Social Development should be to send the correct message to South Africans. And that is, whatever agreement is reached between social development and National Treasury or any other entity for that matter, right? Come the 1st of April, South Africans will receive their money. And I think that's because you, I mean, for those of us who are associated with families who are dependent on the social grants, the reports which have been coming out from the media are causing panic, and it's unnecessary panic, because even though you and I may not have an idea of what these agreements are which have been reached between the minister and whoever else, but the message, the reassurance which has been given to all of us is that come the 1st of April, government will make sure that money is paid to those who are recipients of these grants. In fact, our view as a social, as a department, as a security cluster, is that it doesn't matter what it takes. It doesn't matter what it takes, but the state will have to make sure that how is the responsibility of the state to deal with that. Our responsibility is to give these social grants to our people. How it is done is another matter, because now the focus of the media is on which company or which bank, whether the Post Bank or the current company, will be the one which will give out these grants come the 1st of April. South Africans are not concerned about that. I'm talking about people who are the recipients, not talking about you and I. I'm talking about ordinary people. What they want is to receive their grants come the 1st of April. And if we've been assured that they will receive these grants, there will be no instability in the country as a result of our inability to discharge this function. I think we should welcome that, and that's the message we should spread. Let us focus on the positive narrative which is coming out of this whole thing. The rest of the issues, you've heard that Cabinet will be interacting with the Minister of Social Development on Wednesday. Minister has just addressed the media on the matter, and she has given, I don't think she would have given that reassurance if she does not have a plan. I'm sure there is a plan in place which has been agreed upon. She wouldn't be as confident as she is and assure South Africans about getting their money. I think that for me, I'm just appealing to all of us to play our part and be responsible in the manner in which we report these matters and not cause panic amongst people who are dependent on this money. You and I have salaries, better salaries than what they get. And you and I are assured that we'll get our monies from the banks, but by spreading, by continuously reporting that there isn't a solution imminent, we are creating an impression that our people will not get their money on the 1st of April. And I'm saying, it doesn't matter what it takes. If it means that that money must be delivered in other alternative ways other than the ones which have been used, the state will have to take that decision and do that. Come the first, our people will get the money. Thank you.
No, thanks, Comrade Chair. I think Nicholas, on the question that Minister of Defence was responding to, I think we should also be able to give the as is from a security point of view. Remember that the social development department, there is a mixture on how recipients of those grants receive them. And the one around payment of cash is not a new one, even in time immemorial. In certain communities, because of the infrastructure, ICT, it's happening. And those of us who are coming from those communities, we know the role that get to be played by the security cluster, especially the police. You go there, those elderly citizens in queues, the condition in which our security services that they provide, that no one actually interferes with them. And you know that historically there have been incidents where sometimes in a pension payout point in communities, there are people who have actually tried to commit crime. They have been shooting. Our law enforcement agencies have always been able to keep that. If that's the route social development or SASA needs support, it's not going to be the first time. The support has been provided there before. I thought that, Comrade Minister, we should just add that, because it's not a new innovation. In rural communities, they know that on this particular day they are coming. On that day, the relevant police stations would be around, including intelligence officers. We ensure that the site is secured until people go back home. On the issue around the false narrative in the social media, it is one of the challenges that South Africa faces, like all other parts of the world. Remember, social media is part of our cyberspace that provides endless opportunities. We communicate there, we make friends, we do business, we do other things. But equally, remember that that space, it also has a number of risks. And one of the issues that when you put something in a social network is unedited, you are the editor yourself. The work and what has happened is that our intention, we must be able to continue like we have seen over the last 2 years when we have started to look very seriously around cyberspace, including the bill that we are putting in parliament just to make certain things criminal. We have to continue to actually do civic education and awareness. The space, instead of actually giving us endless opportunities, there are negatives that are coming up. There's a lot of peddling that is happening there. And the information that gets to be posted to them, and the way it harms certain individuals in terms of criminal injury, and it's one of the biggest space. You know, for an example, there was something that was circulating. A person purported to be from Nigeria, saying, no, let's come together, we're going to show them, these South Africans. And the manner of how people are irresponsible, how they use the site, they started to circulate it. It became a biggest issue. It caused a lot of panic. We did our investigation. We discovered it was a hoax. We even know where the voice is coming from. It's not even a Nigerian national, but as you'll respect, Nicholas, we can't give you those details, those who operate. But that's why Minister of Home Affairs, all the time when he was communicating on our behalf, running, they said, no, this is a hoax. You know, you even see photos where people, they are saying, no, in Winterfell, someone has been mob justice there, beaten, someone actually using a knife. How can you just slip down on someone, you are not even being tied? And then you allow someone to actually take your throat out. It doesn't happen. And then there's also the problem of photoshopping, which is also one of the problems there. We are contemplating, Nicholas, apart from monitoring, because of the capacity to monitor, we are contemplating to regulate the space. Even best democracies that are revered, they regulate the space. But we will need the society to be with us, because when we regulate the space, they will start to jump that we're interfering with human rights. Human rights and security, national security, they are not mutually exclusive, but they are mutually dependent. And if we can start to get that understanding when we communicate. Because if that space, we don't actually use it. Sometimes you will get a real alert, but because people are using it for other things, you will not be able to respond. And most of our challenges are coming from that space. We'll be actually discussing to say, how do we regulate it? It's not the first time, but our capacity to be able to do certain things, we should be. One of the worst things about the space is when people want to transmit information that you have not actually even verified. You know, there are too many postmen and postwomen here. You get something, you don't even know that it is authentic. You start to say, smoke and pass. And then it causes those particular issues. But regulation is the way to go. But secondly, is the issues to say civic education and awareness, because that's how you could go. One last issue that I think as support we should always avoid is to try to be judgmental. You know, sometimes we rush to judge instead of informing from a factual point of view. The issue to say there was a failure from the police. Normally they like to say there's an intelligence fail. And not addressing the root cause of certain things that are happening in those communities. If you can do your research there, you will know, like Minister Kigabaya said, how houses actually move from particular hands to some other people's hands. Then those houses, then they became a haven for criminality. And we're not actually placing emphasis about that. Normally, you have a governance failure, someone must fix a pipe for what? It takes time, a pipe is not fixed. Then people get into the street. You will jump and say, where were the police and intelligence? When we are supposed to say, in terms of good governance, those who are supposed to solve problems, can they solve the problem before it becomes a security matter? But the other issues, the general is going to be able to respond to. Because all the time, we'll rush to say, security failure. When we act, there's also the temptation to say we have securitized. Without checking, why did we bring security there? Because someone, he or she, has conducted himself in a particular way, and those were supposed to lead and manage that particular issue before it boils down and becomes a security issue. We are not raising those issues. We are just, my view, Sip, is that let's allow the general to respond, but there are other issues before the matter became a security issue that had to be attended to.
Thanks, Minister. I know Sipo likes this question, and he has become a broken record now. We have responded adequately to this matter, Minister, especially when we dealt with the challenges we were faced with, Rosettenville, Attridgeville, Pretoria West, and Mamelodi. And we have made an undertaking that we are intensifying policing operations in those areas. We have also called for people, not with rumors, with concrete information on those police officers who are alleged to be working together with those that are breaking the law, so that we can take action against any such people. We also, on Friday when we released the crime statistics, we would have made visible the number of successes recorded in respect of those crimes that are dependable on police action, which have shown a significant increase. We are not, as the South African Police Service, going to be judgmental. Driving past a person somewhere in Pretoria's street just because that person is wearing a miniskirt and say, we are arresting you. There are laws in our country, and they must be respected by all. in respect of Marianne's question, Marianne, you may have not captured me correctly. I said the crime statistics are available at the end of a quarter, the first month at the end of the quarter. We are not making them public before we follow a process, and that process requires from us to present to cabinet and to present to the portfolio committee, at which point this the communication to the public and everyone is then being facilitated. But the stats are available at the end of the quarter, and even on whether it's on a weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, for operational purposes. So if we were not to have communicated the stats in a month following the end of the quarter, it will not hamper police response. At an opportune moment, once we have went through the processes, we will communicate to the public. And I think, Minister, the question of the grants has been covered. Even in those outlets where cash is not paid at a school somewhere, whether it is at a ShopRite or wherever, on those days that there are payments, police presence is being increased because we would have done an analysis which may suggest that during those periods, certain crime categories are on the increase. Thanks very much.
Yes, thank you. Just before I go to the follow-up questions from Linda, I think the recent questions that were asked, especially with regard to the steps we are taking to deal with policing matters, intelligence matters, and others, they emphasize the whole of state, whole of government, and whole of society approach that is highlighted in our statement, because it's important for us to act in an integrated fashion as government, addressing the challenges which are being raised relating to houses that have been hijacked from their rightful owners, conversion of those houses to drug dens and the prostitution brothels, with regard to entire flats that have also been hijacked and converted to crime dens, and a whole range of other challenges that we are facing, including the challenges of the employment of non-South Africans in South African businesses. And the results that we are reporting, the 147 people arrested, the 56 businesses inspected, and 7 managers charged, are all because of this working together through the National Joint Operations Center. And the more we continue acting in this way, the more we are going to succeed in dealing with these issues. It's quite instructive that one business was employing 46 undocumented immigrants. 46. That's just blatant violation of South African laws and spitting in the face of the law. We really have to put an end to this, because I think we all remember there is a mic that's on. Thank you. Because we will remember the devastating effects this had at Ispingo in 2015. When Kwajina factory employed undocumented immigrants altogether. The result of that was thousands of people displaced, 7 lives lost, hundreds of properties destroyed, country on tenterhooks, relations between South Africa and our neighbors ruined. We had to go to SADC, the president had to go to SADC and the African Union to explain what had happened in South Africa. I think it is important for all of us, particularly businesses, to understand that these laws have been promulgated after careful thought and in a balanced way. We need to comply with them, to enforce them, and ensure that we don't do anything which may result in all of these unintended but devastating consequences arising as a result of irresponsible activities. Now, you will remember, Linda, that the Immigration Act with the new visa regulations were promulgated in 2014, the new visa regulations. So we now are moving towards the implementation and enforcement of those regulations, and this is the paradigm shift that you are seeing. From punishing the victims of illegal employment towards punishing the enforcers of illegal employment. That's why we are taking action now against the managers, because both the South Africans who are not being employed because they are being insulted and accused of being lazy, of being criminal, of being untrustworthy, and of having no integrity, as well as the undocumented immigrants who are being employed in order to lower the conditions of employment, to lower the wages, because the undocumented immigrants are not going to become unionized, and you can fire them at will prior to employing them and surrender them to the immigration authorities. That altogether is criminal, and that is why we are taking the action against the managers. But we've taken the view as the department that we would rather we cooperate and collaborate with business in implementing South Africa's laws. I think it is in the interest of South African business that we should implement these laws and get South Africans employed, so that we can get as many of our people off the streets into productive employment as possible. We are also going to be meeting with the unions to ask them to support us in this endeavor, so that we can ensure a successful increase in the rate of employment of South Africans. So the convictions have not yet taken place. We have only charged the 7 managers. If we are successful, yes, there will be convictions. This is according to the Immigration Act and the visa regulations of 2014, and this is in relation to the penalties. You can either pay a fine or serve a two year sentence in jail. That's what the visa regulations as well as the Immigration Act say. And that's what we hope to successfully conclude. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please enjoy Sunday lunch.
Bye. Thank you. Thank you very much. On behalf of the Minister of Defense, the Chair, may I thank all the media practitioners and our DGs for the support. Thank you very much.